The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
With me are the authors of a new book called What We Know Now, Lessons on Life, Love, Loss and Friendship. The authors being Jenny Kendi and Mairead Rowan. I should say it's not just life, love, loss and friendship. It's also Hoovers. You have great taste in Hoovers.
We do.
The C3.
Yeah.
As long as you keep the filters changed, that thing is a mighty Hoover.
Jenny confess to something, Anton?
Are we starting with a confession?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, so you have a golden retriever, I believe.
Yes, I do.
I have a golden retriever as
they
well.
They shed
and
like
there's just hair. Yeah. There's just like hair everywhere. Now, I am a mahoosive fan of the Miele. As you've just pointed out.
Oh, yes, they do a cat and dog version of the C3.
The cat and dog version, yeah. Anyway, ours broke after years and years and years. Like, they last forever. Hashtag not an ad. And went to get another one. And it was a slow evening, Anton. It was a slow evening. And I decided for the first time ever in my life to actually read the instruction manual. I don't know whether you do.
I start with an instruction manual.
Yeah, he does. Anyway, for the first time ever, I did. And as I was going through it, I was like, I didn't know that. And I never knew you were supposed to change the filter.
That's crucial.
What?
It's crucial. It's like having a shower after several days. It refreshes everything. It's like a new Uber.
Mairead,
you can send it.
Yeah, I might as well just go outside.
There you go. I was thrilled.
Anyway, there you go. I have three vacuum cleaners, Anton. That's my confession.
Three.
Which is just,
are they all Miele C3s?
They're not.
Hashtag
Miele,
not an ad.
Miele C3, cordless Dyson one, which I do love for that quick run around. And then a friend bought me the Robo one. Which someone else who has one in my life described as a bit of a road sweeper. It just kind of pushes the dirt out to the side. But I think it's okay. It's okay.
Anyway, aside from Hoovers, there is much in this that is addressed. You cover literally the full gamut of everything to do with life. It ranges from ceramic hairbrushes through to how to find the right partner and keep a relationship going. On the topic of relationships, one of the things that you cover is the parting of your respective ways and then ye sort of coming back together, because there was a gap where you weren't particularly hanging out and then you did. Yeah. What happened?
Yeah, well, we wanted to start the book with it. Well, that was a bit of a shocker, wasn't it? Because we were obviously all riding together, and then I send you a message?
You're
and I
right.
was like, I actually think we need to start the book with that. The fact that we were...
That we're not perfect.
That we're not perfect and that we're not this, we're not holding ourselves up as this ideal kind of perfect friendship, which obviously doesn't exist. So, we want to start with that. And I suppose it goes back to a time, my dad died suddenly in 2011 and, you know, sudden death, any type of death it blows your whole world apart. And I went silent. I went quiet. I went in on myself. And that's how I dealt with it. At the time, that's how I would have dealt with anything like that. I would have thought I could deal with it on my own. And I pull back. And any attempt, I think, on Mairead's part to try to help me through that, I was like, no, pushing her away. And at the same time, you were going through a lot of stuff in your life.
Yeah, I was going through my first marriage had ended, and the news of that was out there. As I say, it was a bit of a shock to see it on the front of the Herald one day.
Did it make the front of the Herald?
It made the front of the Herald. It did make the front of the Herald.
That has to be hard.
It was a bit of a shock. That news was out, and also I was kind of unraveling that, legally. And I was also moving home. So I was moving from one house to another house, and with my little son, and he was going to be starting school later on that year. So there was all of this kind of change going on in my life. I was also in a new relationship, and I was trying to mind that and protect that. But Jenny was going through hers. So both of us were going through this really, really awful time at the same time.
Which you would have thought
would be perfect.
We would have pulled together.
Hold me.
You would have thought that.
But instead, we kind of pulled apart. And then, I just think women's friendships, you know, they're quite different to male friendships, I think, and they can be quite intense. Mm. And with that intensity, if something happens, if there's a crack, it can make them separate quite quite quickly because they're hurt. And there was hurt on both sides. And we kind of felt like the other person should understand where that hurt was coming
from. The other person should read my mind.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that it wasn't like a massive big row or anything like that. It was a quietness. It was a pulling apart.
Oh, God, that's worse.
Yeah, I think it would have been easier had there been, I suppose, in quotes, a row. But there was no row. There was no official falling out. It was, as Jenny described, it was this quietness. And we would still text every now and again. And we'd still meet for the odd coffee. But it was all very surface.
It was weird.
Surface level. Yeah, weird.
So how did you get the band back together?
We got the band back together.
I think we were like, I was saying this, it's like anthropological study, you know, of animals in the wild. We were kind of circling each other, you know. We were kind of, you know, saying the odd thing, dropping something in an old text. Oh, she didn't reply. Okay, she replied the next day. Fine. And then
my God, this is hard work.
It wasn't, you know, it was more...
It was all very subtle.
It was very subtle. And then we both love Dunmore East in County Waterford. And we went out for an all-day hike, a massive big hike. We knew we were going to be gone for hours. Brought a picnic. Love an old picnic.
Love a picnic.
And it was kind of on the way back. Like, in my head anyway, I was like, I'm going to say something. I'm going to say something. I'm going to say something. And I did. I just went, right, I just want to say, I just want to clear the air. I just want us to talk. And then two of us... burst out crying and then just sat in the grass like and then kind of hugging and talking, and it was all very emotional and funny.
We were very laughing, funny as well.
And we just came back like two Egypts with our arms around each other, just going like, what the hell, like that was so ridiculous, and kind of vowed never
to let
never
anything
to allow anything
happen again like that,
which led to the podcast. Which led
the podcast was years later after that. Years later. Not like with the podcast.
I didn't say immediately. Yeah. It wasn't like you did that afternoon.
But I think some people might think that.
I was trying to get back to the book,
Later.
Right.
Sorry. It was sorry. I'm trying to produce you here, Anton. Sorry.
Which led to the podcast, which led ultimately to the book that I have in front of me, which led to the revelation that I have to say, Mairead, I am extremely disappointed to read. Extremely shocked and disappointed.
What?
For several years, I have been telling people that if you wanted to get a wedding dress, the one that you had to get was the Mairead Ronan wedding dress. And you have dedicated an entire chapter to your hatred of your wedding dress.
Of both my wedding dresses, actually.
She hated both
of them. Both of them.
Well, I didn't see the first one, but the second one was amazing. It had pockets. It was the coolest
thing.
Both,
and I thought she looked absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. But regardless of that, it had pockets.
I actually remember on my wedding day, you going, that's the coolest wedding dress I've ever seen because it has pockets. I do remember you telling me that on the wedding day. No, I hated both of my wedding dresses. And I think it's quite common for women to not adore and love their wedding dress. You go in, you're shopping, they're kind of all the same in that it doesn't matter what shop you go to, there's mermaid, there's strapless, there's ball gown, there's, you know,
there's
A-line.
Mermaid.
There's a mermaid one, or we call trumpet, depends on what dress shop you go to.
It's like Anton's confused face.
It's tight here and it goes out like a trumpet or a mermaid tail at the end on the knees. Very difficult to walk in, but, you know, very
this
good.
This has been a revelation because during the break I discovered ombre as a thing.
I think, that's ombre? On my top.
Mairead is wearing tie-dye and is trying to convince us that it's ombre.
Said it's ombre. What is ombre?
Anyway, I hated both of my wedding dresses. Both of them. The first one, because I think I was too young. I was 24. I shouldn't have been in a wedding dress at all. And the second one, I thought it was too white, too shiny. Bust looked too big in it. And if I was to get married again, which I'm absolutely not, Louis, I'm never, ever getting married ever again, I'd wear a suit.
But you know what? It wasn't it so, when we were writing it though, and then you put that in the book, we were laughing because we were like, this is the type of conversations that we all have, you know, at, like, obviously after the event. And it was about kind of throwing it out there again and saying, we kind of try to pretend that it has to be this perfect day. You know, the pressure of a wedding day is so huge.
And the dress has to be so perfect.
And you have to look perfect and everything has to be perfect. And this, like, massive, intense situation for one day, which is really only the very beginning of your life together.
What actually has to be perfect on the day is that you've made the right choice in each other.
Yeah, hopefully.
That's the only thing that needs to be perfect on the day.
Speaking of which, you go into a lot of detail about relationships, about your own personal relationships.
Oh, you do.
There's a bit here, Jenny, where you talk about back in the Today FM years, you say after some years, a spark began to ignite.
It did.
Yeah, and it describes the spark, and sorry, it sounds like it's, it. She, you, in fact, describes the spark.
Yes.
You you go on to say the biggest row we'll get into these days is over the most mundane nonsense.
Who are you talking about? Me, not me.
You and Ray. Oh,
you and Ray Dorsey. Oh, yeah.
Like getting all the crap out of the way. Picking up a wet towel or forgetting to put the bin out. I do think that some relationships are like that in the beginning. It's like you get all the crap out of the way so the actual real relationship can begin.
Yeah, I totally believe that. Again, we're sold.
Do you know what the initial spark still a bit?
No, it's not bad. I think it's more that we're sold this lie that for a lot of relationships that they start in a very kind of movie-like way. You meet, you like each other, you start going out, you get engaged, you get married, da-da. But actually, most people I know, it wasn't like that at all. It was completely crackers. There was fights, there was breakups, there was getting back together, there was going out with other people, there was maybe getting back together again. But what I was trying to say is, in a way, kind of getting all that kind of stuff out of the way means that you can have this lovely,
calm,
balanced, calm, nice life with a spark, which is constant. You know, you're keeping it alight, Anton. I know you're looking sad there, but that it doesn't have to be that drama filled.
Well, on this topic, I want to ask you about whether or not you are both committing to an age that you have yet to reach, because there is a chapter about being the grown up. Now, setting aside the large pants and the Birkenstocks, which do make several appearances.
Big knickers and Birkenstocks. We love them.
Yeah.
Setting them to one side, there is a chapter where you describe a hair on my chin that I thought belonged to my makeup brush, but it was attached to my face.
That was me.
The beginning of a bunion.
Yeah, that's me.
Black eyeliner, which now looks weird. Age spots that used to be freckles and the need for neck cream.
This is all me. That's all me.
You're not 104.
I know, I'm not 104, Anton, and most women who are 104 will have many hairs on their chin or neck, and they're probably not using makeup brushes anymore.
Bunions, though, Mairead. Surely bunions stopped in 1963.
No, they're still there, and the beginning of one, and it's coming on the other foot now as well, so it's, you know, just slightly wider shoes. That's why you go with Birkenstocks. And poor Louis, like when he did start going out with me and then married me, like I was in stilettos and now all he ever sees are Birkenstocks.
And he does blame me.
And he blames Jenny on that.
He's like, he just
it was all that hike in Dunmore. You're wearing the Birkenstocks.
It's quite a shock. But I mean, every, you know, woman of my age and younger are like, Jesus, yeah, I found the hair in the chin. Now it's desperate. So you just need to carry tweezers wherever you go. Makeup bag, car,
give your top
bathroom.
Tip. Your top tip of a tweezers is in.
Yeah.
The car.
In the car.
The best light.
It's the best lighting you'll have.
How fast should these hairs grow? It's like between the time you leave the house?
No, they're not growing overnight like yours. You know what I mean? It's not like...
No, but it's like you don't see them and then you could just be sitting in the car and you're looking in the mirror and you go, this is Mary and Joseph. What is that coming out of my chin?
And when you realise it's attached and it's not from your foundation
brush,
it's quite the shocker.
It's quite hard as well. So it has to be
plucked immediately. So that's the hair in the Birkenstocks. What else did I say? Oh yeah, age spots. They're my hands. I think they're from driving. They're my hands on the steering wheel. Look at my hands there.
Mairead's going to turn into Madonna and start wearing gloves.
I want to start wearing gloves.
She just doesn't want age spots.
65 days a year.
The idea of the book, by the way, what we know, Jenny Kelly and Mairead are on, the idea of the book is sort of advice that I get the sense that you might have liked to have known when you were in your 20s that this is what the next couple of years might hold.
Yeah.
Is that the idea?
That is it. I mean, I'm 44. Jenny's in her very, very, very
52,
early 50s.
Proud of that? Proud of it?
So we've gone through some stuff, you know, like we said, marriages, three between us, divorce, motherhood, careers. We've stepped away from our careers. Like I said, hated wedding dresses. And we're just sharing that with people. And I think there will be a lot of women who will have experienced the same thing and will just read it and nod along with us in agreement as opposed to get anything else from it.
And with the podcast, when we even started thinking about writing it, we weren't like holding ourselves up as look at us, look at what we know. We're two gurus. We were saying this is what we know now and we are still learning. We're still failing miserably at things.
Yes.
We're learning and we're going to hopefully continue. But we wanted the conversation to be like, and that's what's in the book, I think. It's how women talk to each other, the type of things that they do talk about. So you could be out for that big stompy walk and you could go from, Jesus Christ, I found a hair in my chin, to, I'm really sad because somebody you know has just got sick, or, you know, you're talking about, oh my God, this spray mop that I got, or I'm thinking about going back to work, or I'm thinking of leaving work, or all these things. So it's about kind of starting those conversations, which we want to continue.
And they're the chats we have on the podcast. So we've kind of said, when we were writing this book, we want this book to be our podcast on paper. And that's what it is.
Yeah.
There's bits of it that are very, I mean, raw may be overstating it, but there are bits that are very open. You write a chapter in it, Mairead, about having kids, and you talk about both miscarriages and about your IVF experience and how difficult that was. Did you have any trepidation saying, I want to put that in print?
I did, because I've never spoken about it before, ever. Publicly, ever. I knew people who'd gone through IVF, but I didn't know, pardon the pun, the actual ins and outs of IVF until I went through it myself. And, you know, I just put it in there. I mean, one shocker was, first of all, needing it in the first place, because I've three healthy children and I've had those three children naturally. I really, really wanted a fourth baby. And I feel like that makes me sound very greedy by saying that, but I just didn't feel done after Bonnie, who's my youngest. And it wasn't happening. I mean, I know how it works. I know how to get pregnant, and it wasn't working. And so, you know, after some very basic fertility tests, it was my age. Louis 5 years younger than me. Doctors described him and his sperm as super sperm. That's how it was described. They were the words.
Louis, if you're listening and you want to download the podcast to keep
was thrilled to hear that. So, look, I ended up going through IVF, and round one, and the reason I wanted to put this in the book is round one, I kept thinking, I'm obviously just really strong. This isn't taking anything out of me. I am grand here. It was going through the motions every night, as we called it, our secret ritual. Nobody knew we were doing it. And I would go to work the next day. I was on air in Today FM. So apart from getting, you know, a bit of a swollen tummy and you look like you've gained a bit of weight, I didn't have any other side effect. I felt exactly as I do today.
Do you mind if I read that bit? Because it's the kind of thing that if you did it once, you'd say, ah, it's not so bad for an afternoon. If it becomes a recurring process, you can see how it would be exhausting. I'd go into Today FM every day, do the radio show, get home, make the dinner, get the kids to bed, get the drugs from the fridge, clean the tummy with an alcohol wipe, then Louis attached the needle to the pen. I stuck it into the chosen spot near my belly button. This ritual created severe bloating to the point where after just 14 days, I didn't own a pair of trousers or jeans that fit. The irony of looking pregnant when you are certainly not is frustrating.
Yeah, and that is how you look. I mean, it's you know, you've got to wear baggy clothes, and that happens most women. But other than that, I didn't have any of the other side effects. And that was on round one. And it was, as they describe, unsuccessful. But because I found it, even say in quotes, easy, I did find that first round quite easy and bearable. I said, we're definitely going to do it again, you know. And they changed up the drug, so we used a different brand for round two. And I was floored. I was floored. A completely different experience. So not only did I have the very, very swollen tummy again, didn't own a pair of pants that fit me, I had extremely tender breasts. I had kind of mild headaches. I was exhausted, mood swings. So it was a total opposite to round one. And I suppose I'd heard more of that than I had my experience round one. And I really, really hoped, because of all those side effects, that this was the one that was going to work. And yeah, I hoped and I prayed and I hoped some more. And but I actually knew when I got the phone call. I even remember the nurse's name. And she got me to confirm my name, my date of birth. I just knew that she was going to use, unfortunately, it was unsuccessful. And so, yeah, it didn't work.
I won't dwell any further on, but can I ask on it? I think there is a sense when people talk about IVF being unsuccessful, it is usually thought of as being an attempt at the first child. And therefore it is binary. It's you have children or you don't. Is the assumption that it is less difficult to deal with because you already have children? Is that a flawed assumption?
No, because I did kind of feel for people who've experienced that and hearing the words unsuccessful, who have no children, and it must be a thousand times more difficult. I definitely, you know, cuddled the kids more and let them away with murder and gave them more treats in the weeks and months after that. So I would say it's slightly easier, yes, of course, when you already have children. But that then led to ultimately my decision, or started me thinking about stepping back from full-time work, because there I was throwing the kitchen sink at trying to have this fourth baby that I desperately wanted to have. But I had these two smallies at home, and Dara was now early teens. So I had two, I would say, small babies at home, and I'm trying to have this fourth one. So I said, why don't I just spend a lot more of my time with the ones I do have and give up trying to have this fourth one that's not happening. So, you know, I think the IVF and the unsuccessful IVF cleared my head a little bit.
Well, that's what I mean about starting with the breadth of what the book covers. Hoovers all of the way to the most personal love topics. The book is called What We Know Now, Lessons on Life, Love, Loss and Friendship. Authors Jenny Kelly and Mairead Ronan.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.